All right, fine. I'll be a gracious host. How you doing?
Little Mermaid is the scariest Disney movie by far, though.
Why the hell is Ace Blade in your Kickstarter?
Some comics. I'm getting controversial today. We're going to get controversial today with...
My proudest moment is this interview and being able to talk to you two.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, Taurus Comics in collaboration with... What?
I wasn't going to do it.
What?
I was not going to do it. I was not going to do it to you this week.
Yeah, I know. We got no more beam for the rest of the year.
I was not going to rub it in because I was rooting for y'all. I was rooting for y'all.
We're all
rooting for y'all. And I'm sorry, man. I wanted to see the Kings in the playoffs, and it just didn't go that way. So.
And I see Fish is in the comics. Fish, my plans, unfortunately, like we talked about, aren't going to happen now because of this.
That's all right.
We had something planned, him and I, so... All right. Can I start the show properly?
Please. I tried not to interrupt you. I didn't even want to make the face.
You're making such a bad face, though.
It just happened. I'm sorry. Because I did think about it. But I was like, no, don't do it. Go ahead. Intro the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm so disappointed now. Damn it. I can't even do this. Children of all ages, Taurus Comics and something collaboration with Fourth Wall Productions respectfully brings to you the 112th episode of the Four Tales podcast. I am your very disappointed host, Kyron Silva from Taurus Comics. Across this way is the purple paragrapher of Ace Blade, Danny J. Quick, and together we're your two award-winning blurred comic creators here to help you find your next favorite comic. We are live on the Age of the Geekdom Network via Facebook, Twitter, Twitch, and YouTube, and apparently TikTok again today. So if you... No TikTok. Okay.
Yes, TikTok. I was telling my son not to take my charger.
Oh, don't be taking people's chargers, DJ. So if you're listening or watching us live, thank you for your support. But don't forget to like, subscribe, share, and review this podcast because all your positive reviews and interactions help us reach a bigger audience.
This is right, though. This 12 o'clock time is very inconvenient to me. I was already up this morning doing stuff. I liked it better when it was 10 o'clock for me. And I could just get up in the morning and get ready for the show before I had to do it. I had to go ahead and send the kids to do laundry. I'm up cleaning. I ate breakfast. And now I had to come back over here and sit down. Season 5, we're going back at 10 o'clock.
We ain't never going back to 10 o'clock. Screw that.
It's never going to happen.
We ain't never going to happen. No, you better get used to it. This is a great way for you to be productive is what you're telling me.
No, I was still productive. I just didn't have to stop production to come be more productive. Shoot.
We ain't never going back. I'm sorry.
I'm with you, Fish. Shoot. This noon thing is for the birds. But no, it's good. I always have my quick takes in early now.
Yeah.
No, actually have more time to do some discovery, some deep dives on our guests. So, it's good. Yeah.
All right, cool. So do you want to bring that guest on then?
Absolutely, absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a young legend in the game. I want to say Mr. Andre Owen has been in comics for 20 plus years now.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And,
we're happy to have you on the show. Thank you for being with us, Andre.
Thanks for having me.
For the folks that who might not be familiar with your work, give us a quick overview of your time in comics and what you're working on now.
Okay, well, so I've been doing comics now for a long time, like you said, over 20 years. I wrote my first comic back in 1998, of all things. I was working as a cinematographer and shooting music videos and commercials and feature films and political commercials, all those kind of stuff. But when you're a cinematographer, you're not doing things that are created for yourself. You know what I mean? You're working for someone else's vision. It's much like being an artist in comics. So I had all these ideas I wanted to do, but it's like, well, I can't make feature films out of these, these fantastical fantasy ideas. So I decided, well, I love comics. Let me write a comic. So that's exactly how I started. So I wrote my first book was Force Galaxia, which is a sci-fi superhero anthology book that has three different stories in it. So that was the first book I wrote, and it took me about 8 years to publish it from when I first wrote it to when I first published in 2006. So I did that, and I've had over the years I've published a whole lot of different books. One called The Stoned Age is an autobiographical book about a bong store I worked at on Melrose in the late 90s, and all the crazy characters would come in there. I write The Sisters of Power, about an all-women's detective agency on Earth's rebellious moon. I write that with a partner, John Crosby, out of Boston, Massachusetts. I do Hero Unlimited One Shot, which is a sort of like my old Marvel 2-in-1, where it's two different characters that are usually not together, but they're in my universe. And I try to combine a new artist with a new writer or vice versa. So I do that. The book that I'm most thrilled about writing, though, is The Bovine League, about two of the altered superpowered cows from Switzerland. So that book is so much fun because I can write, throw any trope I want in there, any kind of cow pun, it's just delicious fun to write. And the last book I've done that just came out last year is a 230-page graphic novel, Omegan Chronicles. So this took me about 20 years to make because, as you can imagine, not being an artist, I had to pay artists for all of that. So that's all the things I'm doing up to this date. I've got other new things planned. Bovine League number 2. I tried to do a Kickstarter, wasn't successful, but I'm continuing to produce that. I started Omegan Wars, which is a sequel to Omegan Chronicles, and I've got an encyclopedia coming out this year of my universe called Briscoe Savoy's Galactic Facts.
Okay. Now, the Omegan Chronicles is the one that was nominated for the Glyph Award, right?
Yeah, it was nominated for Best Artist, yes. The artist, Max Bertolini, the cover artist, Ruli Akbar, Rodolfo Hernandez, and Gabe Pena are all internal, interior artists. And they were nominated for the Glyph Award, which I'm very, very proud of.
I love it. Man, you've been around the comic game for a long time, like you said.
Yeah.
I wonder, did your work in cinematography, help or hurt your, creative vision for comics? Have you, I would imagine, like you just said, you're not being able to do your own stuff may have, made you focus more on your creative output, but maybe, it jaded you a little bit from working with other people. So I wonder, how did it help or hurt?
It actually helped quite a bit. When you're working in film, it's so collaborative. And especially when you're a DP, you're a cinematographer, everything's about lighting and the camera angles and those kind of things. So it translated very easily for me, actually, from going from cinematography to writing comics, because, you're working almost in the same type of medium. I know a lot of people think comics are just like storyboards, even though it's a completely different animal. Right. But they are related, so it's something that you can easily transfer to either medium, for me at least. And as a cinematographer, I think visually, and for comics, comics are such a visual medium, it really helps get the point across, for me to be able to visualize that kind of thing and get the point across to the artist.
Yeah.
Nice. Now, with your history in cinematography, have you considered or thought about maybe taking your IPs and turning them into your own feature films?
Well, it's interesting. I don't make comics for with the idea of making into films. It's not the reason I'm into comics. I make comics because I love comics, And if the opportunity comes and someone wants to, I get an IP of one of my comics and actually turn it into, a TV show or feature film, that would be great. I think The Bovine League would make a wonderful animated series. It's like, they're genetically altered superpowered cows from Switzerland. So, it would make a perfect animated series, but I don't write with the intention of doing it that way. Now, I'm a screenwriter in my other life also, so I've sold screenplays to Hollywood, but, the intention of my comics is really just to make comics.
Nice. How do you balance that? Doing the comics with a lot of us want to make that a full-time job, but then you also have your own full-time job. How do you balance the two sides?
Being a screenwriter it can be lucrative when you sell something, but there's a lot of years where you're not. So it's not exactly the most lucrative business you can get into. And, and of course you guys know comics aren't the most lucrative business either. For me, the writing process, like most writers, it involves a lot of thinking, a lot of in my own head and deciding what'll work. And some ideas I have, I think will work better for the screen, and some will work better for comics.
Mm.
Nice. Okay.
I love it. I love it. The so I wonder, we see a lot of, like, when we talk about Bovine League, I think Bovine League was the first one of your projects that I saw.
Okay.
And I know we see a lot of like properties with animal, you know, animal, you see, you got Ninja Turtles, we got Battletoads. What made you pick cows and bulls? Like, what was what made you lean towards the bovines?
Okay, well,
can I add on to that? Yeah. Hey, what made you pick Switzerland?
Okay, so
everywhere.
those are all tied together. So 20 years ago or so, I was on vacation in Europe, and I went to Switzerland, and I was in Geneva with my ex-wife and her parents. We're having a wonderful time, you know, just I'm touring around Europe, just like I've never been there. So, you know, it's very exciting. So I was buying different gifts in different places I was at. So in Geneva, I went into a store and I bought a coffee mug. You know, I drink coffee. And on the coffee mug, it had every canton or state within Switzerland represented by a cow. And they had the canton's colors on that cow, you know, like green and blue or whatever the colors would be for that canton. And, you know, they had the name. So I didn't think anything of it. You know, I went on my vacation, you know, jammed around Europe, came back to America, came back to L.A. And one day I was just sitting there drinking coffee. And I looked at the mug and I was like, huh, that's a good idea. So literally it was from a coffee mug where it was. So none of the characters in the Bovine League were named after the canton. So much like if someone in Switzerland made a comic about the United States, they would call a character California or, you know, Idaho. Mm-hmm. So I can't call characters like Geneva or Zurich. You know, they're named after the city that they represent. So really, it really just came from vacation, and it literally came from a coffee mug.
Oh, wow. You never know where inspiration will come from.
It's so, like, true.
I think that's one of the great things about creating. Like, I, even with, you know, TikTok and stuff, I always get a random idea from some random thing that I saw during the day. And then I'll have an idea or, you know, have an inspiration of why it's funny to me and want to share it with people.
Like, right. I think
that's one of the best things about creating.
Yeah. Well, you know, I really enjoy a TikTok too for that reason, because, you know, when an idea pops in my head, you know, mm-hmm. you can just go with it right away and you get an audience that's built in there. So, you know, I really enjoy using that platform. I hope they do not, you know, kick us out from the United States. So,
yeah. Yeah.
Now, you're mentioning it's taking you many years at this point to get Omega Chronicles together. Most of it, that, like we said, is because of financing. What ways are you using to finance your books at this point?
So for Omegan Chronicles, I've been working on it so long, I financed most of it out of my own pocket. That's why it took me 20 years to make it. You know, I ran a small Kickstarter last year, but only for like $1,000. I was just trying to get some fans, you know, to build a fan base for the book and be able to print books. So I did a small Kickstarter, but most of it literally has come out of my pocket, you know, for the last 20 years. You know, and it's, you know, I mean, I probably spent $30,000 on this book, you know, to get it produced, you know, over the years. So it's, you know, it's definitely a labor of love. It's my, you know, it's kind of my life's work, you know, and I'm very proud of it. I'm thrilled with it. I mean, it features characters that I created when I was a child, you know, like much like a lot of creative people in the comic industry. A lot of my characters I created when I was, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And I've just simply updated them for, you know, a modern audience.
I love it. Well, the creative process is, you know, you were talking about collaborations earlier. I think we all are a part of a recent collaborative effort. We've been talking with a bunch of creators from the Epiphany Engine Project.
Oh, yes.
Which one of your characters or which ones of your characters are going to be included in that?
Well, I'm thrilled about the Epiphany Engine because it's a collaborative thing of indie black creators, and there's over 40 of us publishers involved. Mm-hmm. The character that I will have is my character from Omegan Chronicles, Francisco the Super Green. Now, he hates that name because it was stuck on him. One of the jokes that I have throughout the Omegan Chronicles is him, people call him the Super Green, and he's always just fuming and saying, "No, my name is Francisco." So it's one of those ironic things, but he's the character that's definitely going to be, in the Epiphany Engine. And I'm thrilled about that. That's going to be such an exciting thing that's happening, you know, in the indie comic world.
Yeah, absolutely.
What information do you have about the Epiphany Engine that you can maybe share with us?
Well, I can tell you some of the writers involved that we have. We have about 8 writers in the gumbo. I'm involved. And it goes from everything from Brandon Thomas to Greg Burham to Robert Jeffrey to Lonzo Starr. Colleen Douglas, I believe, is involved. Rodney Barnes, of all people. And I believe Alvern Ball. That's another one of the writers. I don't think we've announced the artists yet beyond, I believe, Stanley Weaver is involved. Sean Hill is involved. And I think Chris Cross may be doing something for us. So that's all I know right now, you know, from my end. We're running a Kickstarter. It's going to be on Juneteenth for Epiphany Engine. So please look out for that. You know, we're looking to raise a nice chunk of change to get this book done. I believe we're planning a 180-page graphic novel. So it's going to be the important in the 2025. It will be the book or 2025. Yeah, I think it will be the book that'll come out.
Okay. I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. I think it's going to be really exciting. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, talk about collaboration. It's one of those things where, you know, as a creator, you have to, and I know some people may not be comfortable with this, but you have to let your baby go and let other people, you know, put their spin on your character.
I will say that I think that as far as collaborations go, the survey that I received for Ace Blade to fill out for them to write about Ace Blade was very extensive. It was very extensive. They wanted to know Ace Blade's favorite color. They wanted to know is what he likes.
Green for that, right?
What he likes to green. What he likes to eat. What his if he has any stereotypes. If he has any, you know, there were all kinds of stuff they were asking. So I'm hoping that, you know, everybody is able to fill those out and we'll get some really deep. I'm sure a lot of the stuff will be surface level, a lot of, you know, one shots and, you know, punch lines and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm excited about it.
I am too. I think it's going to be such a cool thing. You know, I mean, with all the great writers involved and, you know, tons of characters. I didn't even know your character Ace Blade was involved in it. So that's even more exciting. So, yeah.
Kyron, which one of your characters are in it?
My understanding is Ruby is going to be in that.
Oh, nice.
So. Yeah. No, I'm excited because just the amount of creators that we have that's going to be a part of this. Like, I don't think I've done a couple crossovers, but definitely nothing this size. So I'm excited to see what they do with everybody's characters.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad we have talented writers involved because it's a, you know, that's a hard thing to be able to juggle all those characters. I mean, I know just juggling my own characters and having all the, you know, all their personalities in my head, you know, and trying to get that down on paper is how difficult that is. So I can't imagine having to, you know, take other people's characters, put that in your own head, and then be able to split it out. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Now, when you're writing for your books, do you ever collaborate with other people and show people your work and say, "Hey, can you read this over?"
Yeah, I have a friend, Holly Glazen, and she works as my editor. So she goes over everything I do, you know, my scripts, and then she goes over the comics themselves. So yeah, I work with her. For Sisters of Power, I'm writing with a guy named John Crosby. We wrote the first issue together, but it's one of those books. It's about an all women's detective agency on Earth's rebellious moon. So it's an all women's book. So I know I was writing it myself and I was like, oh, well, I need a partner. And I got John. But then I was like, we wrote the first issue and it turned out well. And it's available now on my website. But when the second issue came along, I decided that I wanted to step away and get a woman writer. So a friend of mine, Isis Climes out of Atlanta, she came on as John's writing partner for issue two, which we haven't produced yet, but I will be running a Kickstarter at some point to do issue two of the Sisters of Power.
Okay. Who's that? Who's that? The Facebook. I need to know who that is, the Facebook user, because we had a conversation about that earlier. And I want to get a poll started on should Kyron bring back the mustache or not? Put a poll in the comments, Kyron. Should Kyron bring the mustache back?
How long have you had the mustache off? Is this a new thing?
Just this week.
Oh.
Brad, it's Brad. See, I knew somebody was going to say something, Kyron, because it was the first thing when I turned on the computer and I logged in, I was like, why did you shave? What is that? Why did you do that? Not that it doesn't look good. It looks good. It just looks different. So
I hate you so much. So.
It's gonna take some time for me to get used to. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Right. He wanted that baby face show, and he was trying to cut off a couple of years.
Yeah. Had to do it. I know I look terrible without.
Mustache. Yeah, I hate clean shaven Andre. So I can't do it. I can't do it either, Danny. I can't.
can't do it.
Like the last time I shaved, I think my 50th birthday, I ended up shaving completely, and I went to work, and people at work were like, "You look like Andre's son." So, yeah,
I'm getting a lot of grays in my mustache and stuff. But my wife is a professional hairstylist. She's a cosmetologist, and she's like, "I don't know. I like the gray. I don't want you to dye it. I don't want any of that stuff." I'm like, "Come on, let me do something to it."
I just decided to embrace it. You know, it started and now it's taken off like wildfire on my face. So it's in my hair now, you know, so it's just this.
Right.
You know, like I say, though, often, you know, it's better than the alternative. You know what I mean? It's rather get gray than not be here, you know.
That's
so. Right.
That's very true. Very true. Man, I love it. I love it. So we're talking about the Epiphany engine. I know they shared a bunch of the family, the central family that's going to be involved. And then the antagonist also. So we're going to be having some more interviews lined up. I see Advent Comics is in the.
Oh, good. And Tony will be able to give you the real deal details deeper than I do, because I'm actually just a contributor, so I'm not involved in the writing of it at all. So
that's what we need to get on here. We need to get Tony on here eventually.
Tony's too busy to be with us.
Tony's too busy.
I know. I mean, he's a firefighter, and you know.
Oh no, he just retired.
He retired.
That's true. That's true. Yeah,
he might have some time, so we'll figure it out. We'll get it done.
All right, I put a link in the comics if you guys actually want to vote. If I should bring back the mustache,
that's it. Mustache goal.
I'm gonna go vote right now. You know what my vote is?
Yeah, I'm clicking on it too. Wait a second. Let me click on that.
Terrible. In the meantime, so crowdfunding. We talk about crowdfunding a lot on here. We've recently, you know, discussed other crowdfunding sites, you know, because Kickstarter is kind of up and down, you know. It's a great, you know, platform. It's you know, amazing that they created something like that, but it's not easy to get support on there if you don't, you know, already have an audience baked in sometime. So what has been some of your experiences with crowdfunding? Are you strictly Kickstarter? Are you thinking about doing Zoop, Indiegogo, things like that? Or is it, what do you think?
Well, in the past, I've been strictly Kickstarter. I haven't used Indiegogo or any other sites. I've been about 50% successful with Kickstarter. I've had some projects that I've done. I think I've tried to do 7 Kickstarters. I've had 4 that fulfilled. Okay. And I've never asked for a lot. You know, I think the most I needed was like $3,000. I do have a property called Hollywood Offenders, which I wrote with a friend of mine, David Lyle Johnson. And it's a lot of fun. It's about Hollywood Boulevard being a Game of Thrones situation where all the different factions, like the cosplayers, battle the instead of Scientologists, we have them as the cosmetologists, and they're trying to do makeovers for people. And so it's this whole weird fantasy world. So we tried to raise money for that, and that actually failed. But you know, that's one of the books I'm most disappointed I didn't get to make, because I think talk about being able to sell to Hollywood, I think it's a built-in thing. Look, you know, in LA and Hollywood, it's such navel gazing, you know what people mean? So if you write a script about the town, or you write a script about acting or writing or something, you're gonna get somebody like, "Ooh, that's really, you know, that's really good, you know, oh man, that's really interesting." So you know, you can play to those tropes if you'd like. But Hollywood Offenders is a book that didn't fulfill. Bovine League Number 2, which I was disappointed in, didn't fulfill. I'm working on and paying the artist Christian Alaminos out of pocket right now, but I wanted to raise, you know, crowdfunding funds to get it finished, but I just didn't get to the finish line. So I've had, you know, successful ones and I've had failed ones. I think we're gonna do Indiegogo and try to do just raise money for Hollywood Offenders that way. Other than that, no, most, you know, if I can't raise it on crowdfunding, I just look to my own pockets then, you know.
I was just about to ask. I had somebody asking on TikTok here, Big Roy. He said, if you try Kickstarter and it doesn't work, what's the next step? And just like you said, a lot of times it's coming out of your own pocket, you know, get it done, or trying to build an audience with one. Or maybe you decide to move, you know, to another project, a lot of ideas, you know.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, most creative people have more than one idea. You know, we have tons of ideas, and we're able to, you know, come up with something different if something doesn't work in the short run. You know, I've never directed a film, You know, I made a bad web series, so you can go to YouTube and look it up. It's called The Psychedelic Detective. I only did one episode, but it's you know, I directed, I shot it, I wrote it, I produced it, I did everything involved with it. And it's not very good. It's supposed to be a comedy, but I obviously don't have a good sense of humor because it's not very funny. But I am
funny in itself, though. That could be comedy.
That's true. That's true. But I have one idea that I think I want to direct as a feature. You know, Charles Lawton with Night of the Hunter. Charles Lawton was an actor who directed one film, Night of the Hunter, back in the 50s. I think I have one good film in me, and I'm a big fan of coming of age movies of teenagers. You know, set in one day. So we had like American Graffiti or Dazed and Confused or to a lesser extent Do the Right Thing. These stories that are set within one area in one day. So mine is I've seen many. You know, I've seen these stories about young white kids in the country, growing up, or in the suburbs growing up. And I've seen stories about black kids in the city growing up or in the suburbs growing up. But I grew up in a small, predominantly white town, and I've never seen a story about black kids in that environment. So I'm writing a story called Perfect Beat. And my idea, much like George Lucas with American Graffiti, I want to do I love musicals. So it's kind of a musical without the singing. So I want to have a lot of music from that era. But it's something I want to direct. I've already got producers. I'm already talking to producers. I'm in the middle of writing the script. And but it's one thing that I'd finally like to direct, a coming of age story about young black kids in a small town.
Okay. I love it.
Yeah. I like we said, I've never seen it. You know, it's something I've never seen. And it's something I know a lot of people will have that experience.
Kyron is so good, man. He got the link. He said he's going to pull it up.
Already had it because I did see it on the website for Psychedelic Detective. I put in the link. I was going to ask you about that because I noticed that there was a lot of names of other series called Psychedelic Detective. I found out there was an MTV series.
Yeah, please, it used to be on the 90s. Like, I didn't know it until I wrote, until I did this and called it Psychedelic Detective. Someone was like, yeah, that was on what was it called? The MTV had the thing. What was it called? Apex? No, it was something they did late night.
It was their animated series.
Blog, animated areas. Yeah. And they had a series called Psychedelic Detective on that too.
Yes, I was before we got there, I was like, are they related in any way? But after looking into it, they're not. Unfortunately,
That's all right. I think that's another great thing about creators. Like, you can have a similar idea or a similar name for something else and be a completely different story. This is a little off topic, but I was listening to Neil deGrasse Tyson. He was talking about how unique we all are as humans, like the statistics of your genetic sequence and how you literally you know what I'm saying?
You,
but then on top of that, you add your experiences, the experiences that you have that make that, affect who you grow up to be. And, here we go. Like, you may have seen one thing because of who you are and where you were born to and the family, you may have seen things and experience them in a certain way to affect your outlook on the world. So now you're the only one who can create this one thing.
Right.
It's amazing to me.
Yeah, I stress that when I talk to classes. I try to tell people, I try to tell kids, like, look, you're the only one that can tell your story, or tell that story or tell it in that way. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, for me, when I came out of film, I went to film school. And when I came out of film school, I was, I had this, you come out of art school or film school and you have a different idea of the world a little bit. And I had this whole idea that I had to find an idea that no one's ever seen before. You know what I mean? Like, to be creative, I have to do something that no one's ever seen and do it that way. And realistically, that's not true. I tell people all the time, like when I talk to class, like, you take a simple story, like girl meets girl, girl loses girl, girl gets girl. You can tell that story in a drama, a musical, a Western, a sci-fi, a detective novel. You can tell that simple story in many genres. And the thing is, tell the story in a unique way. I mean, you look at a story like, you look at something like when Quentin Tarantino came on with Pulp Fiction and people are like, oh, it's so unique. It's not really that unique of a story. It's just told in an interesting way.
Right.
And that's, I think that's the key of being able, being creative is being able to put your spin on these kind of universal stories, It's difficult to come up with something no one's ever seen before.
Yeah.
That's just a difficult thing. And it goes back to what you were talking about, all of us being, individuals of who we are. On that same token, what I've learned over my lifetime is everyone, you're a different person to everybody you meet. You know what I mean? So everyone knows you in a different way. Like I know Chiron because we were on a panel together in Sacramento, and then I saw him at Black Comics Day in February. And Danny, I've seen your name aware, but I don't, that's the relationships I have with you guys. You know what right. I mean? So I see you in this way, but someone else knows you, you know, your mother obviously knows you a different way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's one of those things I think to keep in mind that when you're creating, it's you like you said, it's only you can tell that story. Only you can tell that story you're telling.
Yeah. Very nice. I definitely couldn't tell Bovine League. Like that's one that I was, when you're talking about like stories you've never seen before. Bovine League is pretty darn unique though.
But you also talk about the Bovine League, it's kind of aping like Marvel Comics too. So instead of the Infinity Gauntlet and the Infinity Gems, they're going after the Cosmic Udder and the Four Teats of Matter. Right. So, you know, it allows you to, you know, play those kind of puns and, you know, do, I mean, it's, I can't tell you guys how much fun it is to write that book. You know, because my story arc goes over six issues. So I've got it plotted out the whole way. And of course, you know, through life, I change things, you know, through, as life comes or whatever. But, you know, I'm just thrilled to write that book.
So when can we expect issue two to come out? Now, you said we had some issues with Kickstarter, but when can we expect issue two to come out?
So issue two, if I can get myself together, I think it should be out by Black Comics Day next February. So, you know,
Danny said he's going to be there next February too.
Oh, well, oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. That'll be awesome.
I'm trying to force it.
It's a great
show. Stay it into existence and it will happen, right?
Exactly. It's a great show. I really love it.
I that's one show that I would absolutely fly out there to do, but you know, I usually stick to the East Coast shows because I don't have to get on the plane.
I envy you East Coast creators because there's so much stuff so close together. You know, so many shows you can easily draw. I mean, I'm from the East Coast originally, so I know, you know, so many. I mean, you can get, you know, go from New York to Boston to Atlanta, you know, and then on the West Coast, that's just being in California.
That's just big. Me and Kyra talk about that all the time. I can literally drive all the way down to Florida to Disney World in the time it takes him to just stay in state.
And that's one of the harder things about being a comic creator here, because it's like, I'd love to come up to San Jose to do a show, but it's like, I got to go all the way to San Jose, you know, that's a long
drive from where you are. That's a drive.
Exactly. Or even up to Sacramento, you know, that's 5 hours for me. You know, it's a hike, you know, just to come up.
I can go through two states in 5 hours. Literally, I can be to Baltimore. I can get to Baltimore in 5 hours from where I am.
And you know what's crazy?
If I drove for 5 hours, I don't think I hit the grapevine.
Yeah, I don't think you would either. I think you would just about hit the grapevine.
Yeah, just about that. Yeah.
And you'll be in Central California all that time.
And trust me, that's when I started speeding up faster because I do not want to be in that part of California.
Oh, no. It's bad. Have you ever driven north up the 5 out of LA and go through where they call Calshewitz, that area where there's nothing but cattle?
Yes. Like,
oh my God.
It's just horrible.
Danny, you see it coming. You can see the flatulence in the air.
Yeah. The sky just turns brown.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the hell?
The first time I ever went by, I literally had to stop my car and get out and take photographs because I've never seen that many cattle in one place.
Yeah. All it is just field of just cows just everywhere you look.
I mean, for like a mile. I mean, it's for miles. It's insane. You know?
That's crazy.
They call it Calshewitz.
Literally, Calshewitz. I love it. Definitely got to put that in the Bovine League. Definitely.
Oh yeah, no, there's definitely that. You know, a mad cow takes a. You know, the mad cow disease has a place in the Bovine League too.
Okay. All right. Well, since we broached the subject, let's go ahead and do quick takes, which is my favorite part of the show.
All right.
If you haven't watched the show before, quick takes is a rapid Q&A section where we grill our guests on their deepest, darkest secrets that we've discovered on the web. So, Kyron, if you're ready, let's do it.
Quick takes.
All right. So, Brother Andre, we're going to give you 45 seconds each. So, we got five questions, and you got 45 seconds each to answer them, okay?
Okay.
The first question you already addressed, so I'm just going to give you 45 seconds to get into the Cosmic Udder and the Four Teats of Matter. How did you come up with that, and exactly what is it?
Okay, so the Cosmic Udder and the Four Teats of Matter are a powerful object that was supposedly created in the pre-Lapsarian period by one of the mad cow gods at Adhumla. Adhumla is the Norse cow god. So she created this cosmic utterance, 14ths of matter, to control reality. But the other cow gods decided that it was too much power, and that they were going to take it from her and spread the teats of the teats of matter around the world and move the cosmic utterance somewhere that they cannot be found. So this is thousands of years later, and Nandi, the mad cow god from India, decides he's going to find the cosmic utterance, the teats of matter, to control reality.
See, I love it.
That was a great breakdown right there.
I just love it. I love it. Like, the things that you can do in comics is just...
Oh, and it's so much fun. People don't understand. Like, I mean, I think people are limited sometimes what they think about comics and what you can do, but you can literally do anything, anything.
Any story. Okay, question number two. You've been around the game a long time, like we said. I saw on your Facebook you had taken a picture of Sebastian back in 2009 at a, at a Comic-Con or something like that. So you've been around shows a long time. I want to know, you know, as a creator and as a, you know, just a fan of comics, do you prefer big shows or small cons, and why?
Okay. Well, as a creator, I've learned to love small shows because people that come to small shows tend to be there to buy. You know, like I've done, I did San Diego Comic-Con. We used to do, I had a group called the Antidote Trust. And it was a whole bunch of creators, including Sebastian when he first started Stranger Comics. And we'd pool our money to go to like the San Diego Comic-Con to get a big booth. But, you know, those booths are at the time, they were like $5,000. So there'd be, you know, maybe there'd be like 10 of us in the booth, you know, at $500 a piece. And it, you know, you sell at big shows. I'm not going to say you don't sell at big shows, but I sell better at small shows and I tend to like small shows. Now as a customer, I like big shows because I like to be able to see all the exciting things I never see.
For sure. 100%. I'm with you on that.
I want to say thank you because I found out during our research time with this, I saw the interview you did at SDCC where you had Barbara Kiesel as the host. I didn't realize I've been saying her last name and her husband's last name for the longest time.
I know. it's like your whole life. Yeah. I was so excited to be on that panel with her doing that. You know, it's so funny. It's like, you know, it's especially because I've worked in Hollywood a long time. So I've been around a lot of celebrities and stuff. But, you know, the celebrities that impress me are people like her. You know, these people where it's not like, oh, you know, it's a big giant star, but it's someone small. Like I am. For instance, I worked at the Game Show Network. I was the tape librarian, so I was in charge of all the different game shows that we had there. Mm-hmm. And we worked with outside storage units where we'd store a bunch of other tapes before we digitized everything. And there was a woman; her name was Alyssa Sarna, this white woman, and she worked at she worked at an outside storage unit. So you know, she's very nice. We were talking one day, and she tells me, "Hey, I was I don't know what it was. Rick James came up, and she goes, I was in Rick James' band.' I was like, "What?" She goes, I was the white girl in Rick James' band. I was like, what? And she was like, I forget what song it was. She was the one, she said, I heard it too. It's like, I don't know if it's Ghetto Life or Super Freak, but there's a line where you hear someone go, say what? And like, she's the one that said that. So I'm like, you know, I'm all impressed. I'm like, wow, you were in Rick James' band. You know, that's really impressive to me. So fast forward now, that was years ago. Fast forward about 6 months ago, or maybe longer, shorter than that, 4 months ago, there's a Rick James documentary out. And so I'm watching this documentary, and they cut to Alyssa Sarna, this woman I know. You know, and just, she's sitting there saying, like, yo, I'd still be Rick James if he was alive and all this stuff. So, you know, I was more impressed meeting her than I was, say, like, I've been like to Adam Sandler's beach house to parties and stuff and meeting celebrities that way. And, you know, somehow got myself invited to that stuff, which is cool, you know, which is cool. But like I said, I'm more excited about celebrities like Barbara or like this woman, Alyssa.
I love it. That's great. I think you get better stories like that, too, like. The things that you would never even think of, like somebody saying, oh, I was this person who did this weirdly specific thing,
right? You
know, that stuck out. But yeah, okay, all right. So question number three. Again, as a longtime congoer and now as a creator, how can I ask this? Cosplay or fan art, which one do you think is more important? Which one do you think is more important to comic books?
Huh, that's a good question. You know, I've never really thought about that, you know, on that level. You know, I must say I enjoy cosplay a little better than fan art in the sense that, you know, as a non-artist, it's sometimes hard for me to wrap my brain around that artists just don't produce their own books all the time. You know, Like I used to draw. I almost went to art school after high school, but I chickened out and went to film school instead. You know, so that's neither here nor there. But when I draw, even to this day, I draw my own characters. And so it's always weird for me when people draw fan art and they spend all this time creating this art that, I mean, I guess you can sell as fan art, but it's, you know, it's not your IP. So I'd say cosplay is better for me on that level.
Okay, that makes sense. That's an interesting perspective. Okay, so question number four. And now, because I know about the rich history you have in film, I'm going to say, in an alternate universe, if you could not do film or comics, what would you be doing?
Oh, my goodness. What would I be doing? What would I be doing if I couldn't write? Well, if I couldn't do film or comics, and I'd still be writing, I guess, because it's something I always do. So I'd probably try to write, be a novelist or, you know, something like that. I don't know what I would do. You know, I've done both film and comics my entire life. That I don't know. I mean, heck, you know, I'd be happy working at a car wash. You know, just and being able to meet people. You know, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, as a writer, I've done a lot of jobs. Like, I've got this idea of doing a TikTok series. Actually, I might start called My Mini Jobs, because I think I've had 39 jobs in my life. You know, they're doing different things, and that doesn't include the temp agencies I've worked at. So. Mm-hmm. You know, I've done so many different things to survive as being a creative. You know what I mean? Because, you know, both as a filmmaker and as a comic book writer, it's not the most lucrative business.
Right. Yeah. I love it.
I want somebody to come out and say something outrageous about their alternate universe. Be like, I want to be a porn star.
Right.
You know, well, I want to be a garbage person.
Well, I wouldn't be a porn star. I actually worked in the porn industry as a cameraman for a little while with a friend of mine, Carlos Batts, who's rest in peace. He was this great fetish photographer. And he got me involved in working with him. And I tell you one thing, that industry, I've been in a lot of settings, a lot of professional settings, a lot of stuff. But I was such a professional in those settings. So I didn't want to look at anything that I wasn't supposed to look at.
Yeah. So came in with the blinders on for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's like,
I was like, hey, what?
It's much like if you work in the sausage industry, you know, you see how the sausage is made. So it's like, you know, now I know how the stuff is made. So it's not, you know, it's like, oh, I can't, I know what's going on behind the scenes. You know, I know there's, you know, 12 people just standing there, you know. So.
Right. Terrible. Okay. All right. So last but not least, we always end our quick takes with a random top five specific to our guests.
Okay.
Since you have the Bovine League, I know you're a fan of sports also. I want to know, just off the top of your head, 5-1, what are the top five sports?
My top five sports? All right. Let's see. Track and field, 5. Okay. Yes, I ran track in college, so that's something. Yeah. You know, track and field, 5. Guys, this is a tough question. Baseball, 4. Gosh.
I know what's going to be number one. I already know.
Yeah. What's 3? Gosh, three. What do I enjoy watching? I guess college basketball is 3. Okay. Pro basketball is 2, and NFL is 1. And maybe I have to throw college football in there because that's something too. I was I'm a big Notre Dame fan because I was raised Catholic, and my mom sat me when I was a little kid. My mom sat me in front of the TV and said, "This is your team." So. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always been that way, and I became a Raiders fan. Actually, I grew up on the East Coast, but
Notre Dame to the Raiders.
It's so funny though. So I grew up with people were Colts fans or Eagles fans or Redskins fans, but it was week 3. I'm gonna say how old I am here, but it was week 3 of the 1973 season, and I was a little kid, and I had been a Dolphins fan because they had won the Super Bowl the previous couple years. You know, when you're a little kid, you're like, oh, Dolphins. But week 3 of the 1973 season, I turned the TV on, and no one was around. It was me by myself. I watched the first football game I ever watched on my own, and it was the Oakland Raiders versus the Miami Dolphins. Wow. And the Oakland Raiders broke the Miami Dolphins winning streak. And as a kid, I was like 7 years old. I was like, I like that team now. So
this is it. This is my team.
You know, so I've been a Raiders fan for, 50 years now. So.
Oh, I love it. Okay. Love it.
Awesome. Long-suffering.
Hey.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, we just talked about Kyron and his Kings at the beginning of the show. So.
I'm sorry, Kyron. I have to go with Phil Jackson and call you guys a cow town. So,
wow. All right, so Andre will not be back on our show at all. Gee.
Well, it was nice having you, Andre. We'll not.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm gonna tell Keithan to not put me by you next
time. Right next year, exactly. Geez, sorry about that, man. Yeah. Dang. No, you know, it's so funny. I actually lived up in Sacramento for about 8 months there. I really enjoyed my time up there. It's a nice city, actually. So I can't say it. Full of trees. Probably the most trees in any city I've ever been in.
Yeah, we actually have the most trees per square foot or something like that from any city in the world.
Yeah, I imagine. Yeah, it was quite tree filled.
Yes,
that's good. I never like looked at pictures of Sacramento, but that's not what I imagined. I imagine like rich tapestries of like hillside buildings. Like I don't know what I was thinking of. But anyway, Andre, thanks for doing that.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate it. Kyron, thank you.
No, all right. Well, we want to make sure that people check you out, Andre, and follow you.
So yeah, you can find all my comics at my website, which would be herounlimited.com. So HIRO unlimited.com.
All right. And what about social media? Where can people check you out?
You can find me everything. I'm at social media at RedSkew. So REDSKEW across social media. I think Instagram's the only one that's different. It's at @red_skew. But TikTok, everything else is at RedSkew.
Okay. All right. Danny, where can people check you out?
Well, you know, if you want to find me or Ace Blade, the best place to go is our website, fourthwallpros.com. And if you want to find me on social media, the best place to look is at the Ace Blade on all social media platforms. Kyron, where can people find you?
You can find me at tauruscomics.com. Check out all my books there. You can also find me at all social media platforms, including TikTok now, which I don't know why I got banned for that, but I'm back on there, at Taurus Comics.
And this is first TikTok. I never know why. Man. I never know why stuff happens on TikTok.
You got blocked for 12 hours and it's back on.
Seriously. I'm like, what did I do?
Yeah, what did I say? Yeah, what did I say?
At least tell me what I did wrong before you banned me.
Right. I see people saying crazy shit on there, you know, where I'm like, why aren't they banned?
Yeah. But if this is your first time checking out our podcast, you can go to our website, foretellspodcast.com. You can go and listen to our previous episodes. You can buy some merchandise. You can check out what's coming up for us. But definitely join us next week where we're going to have Shondar Wilson of Shockwave Comics on. We're talking about everything he is producing. And I have a feeling he's part of Epiphany and Genosis. We'll try to get some information from him also.
I've seen some good art from him too. So
yeah, I was going to say that's some good art there.
But until next time, everybody, sayonara, goodbye, and please take care of yourselves.
I want to know what it is Quick is trying to say.